B-Pod Studios.
And the Sports Hub app.
Thanks for choosing Felger and Maz to entertain and inform you in the afternoon.
E-class.
Felger and Maz. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Yeah, we got to win that game. This is very easy to just throw on top of the pile and say we're not playing good. This wasn't us not playing good. This was me sucking today. That's frustrating because today was the day we were going to turn it around. You know, we're back home, ceremony, in front of our home fans, playing our first home game. Everyone did what they had to do except for me, and that's a frustrating spot to be in.
All right, there's more Chris Sale there. We're going to wrap up your Red Sox calls here, and we'll hit on the Red Sox all day long. But we've got a lot of other stuff to get to. The Patriots, there's a lot of activity today down at Gillette. A lot of activity down there.
Good.
It's about time.
Not just looking at young quarterbacks, which they're doing. First-round prospect quarterbacks in the building today. They signed a tight end. They had Demaryius Thomas in. Demaryius Thomas?
I don't mind this. I don't know why you guys are outraged.
I can't stand that player.
I didn't say outraged. That's just him over there. And normally I would be because he's soft as puppy poo.
Oh,
but
I hate that player.
I need a warm body. They have nothing really at wide receiver outside of Edelman and Philip Dorsett. So good. Bring in anybody.
He's a wuss is what he is.
Okay, as opposed to who? Bruce Ellington?
Okay, T.J. Yeldon I actually like. Pass catching back, right?
I like that too.
Okay, I'm fine with that. That one I don't mind. And they're looking at first-round quarterbacks in the building.
Ooh.
Okay, so we'll get to that. We have a follow-up on Gostkowski as well. We got to get to the Magic Johnson stuff. And we'll do a Bruins Minute coming up this hour with Ty Anderson in studio. He'll give us a look ahead to that Leaf series. So we'll do all of that, but I want to, you know, zip through some of these calls here before we get to Ty. Here's Billy in Rhode Island. How do you feel about the Red Sox? You worried, Billy?
I'm not worried. I'll tell you why. I just go by, just common sense thing. We got 150 games left. I understand they're starting off terrible, but this isn't football. This isn't 16, 17 games. It's 150 more. They're only 2.5 off the Yankees for second place. I think we're going a little too far.
Okay, Billy, I hope you're right. I don't need a lost season. That does no one any good. Okay, so I hope you're right. And the folks that say 150 games, it's true. But then tell me why these good starts and bad starts seem to translate over the remaining 150. It's just, you're right, it shouldn't make any sense that, and again, where I drew the line was 20 games in my sample. You know, so when you play 20 games, you've still got 142 left. But really, if you don't start well, you typically don't finish well. And if you start well, you have a chance to go all the way. It's just sort of the way it works, and I don't know why. Seems to make no sense, but that's just the way it is. So your optimism is sort of going counter to what the statistical evidence would tell you.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense if you go by the math, right?
Right, exactly.
If you go by the sheer math. But I don't know, you tell me, does it make sense if you're talking about human beings who start out bad, get demoralized, and then they're not into it as much, and the whole year becomes a grind, it's not enjoyable, you're running uphill the whole time, and then you fall a little short at the end.
I mean, if you want to feel better, you can go back and find some teams that started poorly. Like, here's the best example. So I told you, the last team to win the World Series after starting below 500 in their first 20 games was Florida in 2003. They were 9-11.
Okay, again, so 9-11, though.
Yeah, they were right there. Okay, the year before, Anaheim in 2002, they were 6-14.
Okay.
So there's a comp.
Good one.
Okay, that's an excellent comp. That was a crap-ass start. They got hot. They climbed out of it. They got hot in October. Their bullpen got, again, they had a lot of help, that bullpen.
They most certainly did.
Okay, but either way, there you go. Anaheim, 6-14, went on to win the World Series in 2002, 17 years ago. So I'm just telling you. I mean, it's counterintuitive. I mean, it doesn't make sense that those first 20 games or 10 games or first month would mean so much, but it turns out that it kind of does.
I'm just telling you, it's a long season to run uphill the whole time. That's all. It's a long season to run uphill.
Tim and Braintree, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. So I just wanted to get your guys' take on this. So yesterday, through the first three innings, Sale was pitching pretty well, but if you look at Toronto, every player was dressed like it was the end of October, and Chris Sale was out there in nothing but a t-shirt, and he's sitting in there blowing his hands every 2 seconds, and then he just got smashed. I mean, do you think that the way he was dressed and the cold was a factor in that?
No.
Me neither.
I mean, I would if he was good in his first two starts in a dome and in California, and then he comes home and pitches in the cold, and he's in short sleeves. Say, okay, well, the weather got to him. He's pitched like this all year.
Yeah, I think he always pitches in short sleeves. Other Aprils, he's done it. Like, to me, there's no connection there whatsoever. And in fact, the colder the weather, the more the pitcher is the advantage. If you ask me, he's the one guy that's moving all the time.
Drew in Connecticut, give me your thoughts on that Sale contract.
Hey, so, Anthony, I usually agree with all your baseball takes. You're, you know, obviously an astute guy in this department. But here's the thing. If you think that they haven't wildly overspent or wouldn't wildly overspend without doing all the due diligence they should have, or at least having some competent people doing the due diligence, you're wrong. And there's so many examples of this, okay? Just with pitchers alone, you have John Lackey, you have Tyler Thornburg, you have Carson Smith, you have a list a mile long. Then you can even go back and say they're the reactionary team with moves like Carl Crawford and wildly overspending on everybody and their brother. They come back around and they say, well, we won't wildly overspend on free agents. We'll admit that we made a mistake with John Lester, and let's correct that by the course correction being so far in the other direction that they make a stupid, stupid move when they didn't have to and give a guy an insane contract.
So, Drew, I hear you. You're right. They seem to ignore the medicals on Thornburg. They seem to ignore the medicals on Pomerantz. They seem to, and in fact, even when Major
that's a Dombrowski thing.
I mean, don't I have this right? Didn't even Major League Baseball step in and say San Diego wasn't upfront about the medicals? The Red Sox knew it. They had a chance to get out of it, and they still said, forget about it. We'll take them.
Yes.
So they do have a history with that. Don't tell me they have a history, or don't tell me they're going to do that for $150 million for a 30-year-old pitcher. I can't believe that they're that bad or that reactionary or that negligent.
No, I can't believe that either. And again, I just have a hard time believing that they went in there, they looked at his shoulder, and they said, well, there are some problems in there. Let's give him money anyway. I don't think they did that. And the other thing is all the cases that he just cited, they've made plenty of bad signings on the free agent market. I wouldn't cite, though, you know, Tyler Thornburg and Carson Smith as extreme expenditures. Those are small ones.
Right.
Even so, all the guys he rattled in Pomeranz on top of it, they all came from outside. Pablo Sandoval, Carl Crawford, Hanley Ramirez, they all came from other organizations. So you didn't have the guy in-house. You didn't have him watching, you know, you weren't watching him every day and testing him during the season to see how he held up in terms of arm strength and flexibility and resilience and all that other stuff. They've had this guy in-house for 2 years. They've had him here.
So don't, I can't believe, I refuse to believe that they would sign a guy who's damaged goods.
See, I don't believe that.
To that kind of you want to tell me about a flyer on a reliever like Thornburg? That's different. $150 million as your ace? And he's, no, I don't believe it. I believe he's fine physically. And they just went too far with the babying him and trying to get him through the season. Or maybe taking the wrong approach. Maybe Maz's approach is better, which is come out whipping it. Be yourself. We're just going to give you 2 weeks to a month off in the middle of the year, and that's how we're going to build it.
I mean, that's what I would do. We're going to change it to two and a half month seasons for you. That's what we're doing. They'll give you a month off in the middle.
Blair in Maine, go.
Hey, what's going on, Felger and Mass? So my thing is that Chris Sale's not pitching like he did last year, and that, yeah, we don't have to worry, but we have to worry about what's going on because we just lost to Toronto Blue Jays. And have we ever lost to Toronto Blue Jays? You know, this is a pretty bad team. Toronto Blue Jays, like, really? We lose the Toronto Blue Jays?
So that's another thing. I mean, I'll just stop you there. Seattle's off to a good start. They're playing well.
11-2.
Yeah, you can sort of excuse that. Now, fine. They were a good team. Okay. Oakland won 90 games last year. You're in their building. Fine. That's a legit team. Now you're talking Arizona, some crap-ass National League, you know, second city outfit, and then this Toronto team at home on opening day, Toronto, which is in full tank mode. Now that's scary.
Yes, it is scary. And again, I didn't see the post game last night. I saw Zoe tweet about this last night. So I don't know, maybe Murray, you saw it. Maybe Jimmy Stewart did. Apparently, in the post game show last night on Nesson, they were saying the Blue Jays are somehow a bad matchup.
Yeah, I saw something around. Let me look at Zoe's tweet. But
in what way?
Maybe they have some, you know, players we just don't know enough about, and they're better than we're giving them credit for.
I'll tell you what way. They try.
They care. Yeah, I was going to say, they care. Who's the new manager there?
I don't even know who they hired.
He was doing stuff yesterday. I was sort of yelling.
I couldn't even tell you.
I was sort of questioning it when I saw it in real time. But
not Freddy Gonzalez.
They're bunting. You know, they're sacrificing guys over. They're hitting and running. They're stealing home. They're like doing all these. So they're actually trying. That's what I noticed. They were actually trying.
Yeah, according to Zoe, apparently the Nets and Post game said it was a tough matchup against a bunch of players we don't know much about.
Oh, please.
Their closer is Ken Giles, who sucks.
The guy who's on NBC Sports Boston at night?
That's Tom Giles.
But that's the kind of lineup they're throwing out there. Who the hell are those guys? Please.
Oh, that's good.
A bad matchup because Tommy Giles is closing. Would you stop with this? Tony in Kingston. Go ahead, Tony.
Hey, fellas. Are you really surprised at the start and pitching this year?
Yes.
Because I'm really not.
Tony, do you think it would be this bad?
Well, first off, I thought Sale, he didn't pitch really much for the last 2 months of the season. Light guy, you guys have been talking about that ad nauseum. He's a little guy, he's tall, but he's a small guy. Small guys usually don't turn into great power pitchers. But anyway, we know about Price. You know, is his elbow good? Is his fingers tingling? Blah, blah, blah. Eovaldi, I'm a Yankee fan. I bit the poison fruit of Nathan Eovaldi, thinking he was going to be a savior for the Yankees. He brings
okay,
you in.
But Tony, this bad?
Maybe not this bad. I just don't. Everybody's saying that was the strength of their team.
It is.
I don't think that was the strength of their team. The strength of their team is their hitting. Okay.
I'm just going to stop because we're getting up against it.
They're built around the rotation.
So look, but I see his point. If you want to say Eovaldi is going to revert to the mean, or some of these guys are going to get off to slow starts, like fine, like I get that. A 9 ERA as a staff?
No, that's exactly right. They haven't been mediocre. They've been dreadful.
Do they have a single win from the starting staff this year?
Nope.
That doesn't surprise you? Come on.
No wins from the starters.
So that's above and beyond. I'm sorry, that's above and beyond.
They are 30th in the major leagues in starting pitching. 30th. Dead last. Like, again, I think their expectation was, we'll come out, we'll be mediocre at the beginning, but that's all right. We'll go 8-7. We'll be okay, and we'll be right where we need to be when we hit our stride. They never expected 3-9.
Okay, Bruins Minute coming up with Ty Anderson from 98.5thesportshub.com. We'll ask Ty Anderson and ask you, if the Bruins gag this, if they blow this, how does it happen? How do they get beat? Where are they vulnerable? And if they go down against the Toronto Maple Leafs for the first time in 50 years, I think it might be 60, Maz. How does it happen? Ty Anderson and the Bruins right after this.
This is Felger and Maz
on 98.5.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Sports Hub app.
Thanks for choosing Felger and Maz to entertain and inform you in the afternoon.
E-class.
Felger and Maz. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Yeah, we got to win that game. This is very easy to just throw on top of the pile and say we're not playing good. This wasn't us not playing good. This was me sucking today. And that's frustrating because today was the day we were going to turn it around. You know, we're back home, ceremony, in front of our home fans, playing our first home game. Everyone did what they had to do except for me, and that's
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Felger and Maz.
I love it.
You were right, Maz.
I just keep loving it more and more.
Bored my listeners to death.
I finally feel alive.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sounds good.
15 left. All season long, the Bruins have been resilient. All season long, the Boston Bruins have found a way. Tonight, trailing, heading into the third period, the Boston Bruins make it happen. The Bruins win it in Game 7. Victory 7-4 over the Toronto Maple Leafs. Goodbye, Toronto. Hello, Tampa.
That's what it sounded like. Game 7 last year, Bruins Maple Leafs. as they advance to face Tampa in the second round. Bruins hoping for a repeat this year. Just taking out that Tampa part. Help us break it down. Game one tomorrow here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Ty Anderson, fine Bruins reporter and sports writer from 98.5 The Sports Hub, joins us in our Town Fair Tire studios. What's up, Ty?
What's going on?
Oh, yeah, we talk Ty.
If they lose, Ty, how do they lose? If the Bruins lose, how does it happen?
Because their goaltending digs them too deep a hole and they can't get out of it.
I can't believe you said that.
Is that a boy?
This is a member of the Boohoo Tuca crew. Really? You believe that's how it happens?
Well, okay, so if Rask has a bad night and they stick with him and he doesn't snap out of it in game two, now you're 0-2 going up to Toronto, and now you say, okay, now it's Halak. You give Halak zero room for error there. The team has no room for error, and I think that's too big of a hole. This team isn't, in my opinion, as good offensively or consistent enough offensively to be what the Capitals were last year when they went to Holtby. Like, I think this matchup would be too difficult, and they're not as offensively skilled to pull themselves out of it.
I don't mean to bust your balls too badly, but you are a Tuca believer. You are on Tuca's side. You have been. Yet when I ask you about the series, your biggest concern is Tuca.
Yeah, because I can't deny the facts. They're staring me in the face. He's been one of the worst goaltenders in the NHL for a month and a half now. Like, he hasn't been good since March, and you know, you look at the lapses.
This is just glorious, glorious objectivity.
Good job, Ty.
Give me the facts. Go.
I don't buy into the last game of the season being this horrible thing we have to overanalyze and study. But I also look at Toronto and say that team can hang a five spot on you real quick. You look at their top two lines. They have Marleau on their third line right now. Like, that is a good team, and if they can get on you offensively, if you can't clamp down defensively, like, they can really make you look stupid, and that's what kind of worries me about this series. You know, you look at the Bruins, their losses recently to Tampa, they're getting stretched out in the D zone. Toronto wants to do that to you. If they can, they will, and they got some guys that can make some great passes, Tavares, Mitch Marner, players like that. So I worry about it from that angle, yes.
What about the take second? What would be second on the list? Secondary scoring?
I would say that second line. Is that going to be a revolving door? You're going to find somebody there. Right now, it's Carson Kuhlman to begin the series. Does that finish the series? You know, I think Cassie, he's very quick to throw his lines in a blender. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But you're going to have to put somebody who is either not ready, in the case of Kuhlman there, or you're going to have a left shot playing on the right side, which Cassie doesn't seem to necessarily love. You know, he's talked about Heinen being better on the left side. Johansson better on the left side. So who goes there? If
doesn't he have Heinen on
out?
The right side on the third line though now?
He does, which I thought was a little strange. I looked at that and I said, well, that was weird, because not even a week ago he said that he thinks he's better on the left. So what does that mean now? So how long does that line stay together? I look at these middle two lines and I say, this can be really good or really bad and lead you to sort of rely on that Bergeron line to carry you again. And they can do that. But I just worry about if they can do that over the course of a seven-game series.
You are also one of those. You want to see Pastrnak with Krejci, don't you?
No. I want to keep that line together.
Oh, you do? Okay.
That line is so good. And you look at Toronto, that Toronto series last year, they destroyed them. And Morgan Rielly and Ron Hainsey are still their top. That's still their top pairing. I don't believe in that pairing. And I was reading Babcock yesterday. He said, what do you like about Hainsey? They asked, what do you like about Hainsey? He said, well, he's not a minus player. He's been on the ice for 27 goals against the Bruins have scored over the last 2 years.
Hainsey has?
Yeah.
Just him.
Like 20. The Bruins
have. How is that possible?
53 goals they've scored against Toronto over the last like
half have been with this guy seasons. On the ice.
Half have been with him on the ice.
See, this is why Cassidy's keeping Pastrnak with that group, because Toronto can't handle them. At least that's what the Bruins are betting on. I mean, because logically, you look at that and you say, why wouldn't you want more waves?
That's a good point.
Right? Why wouldn't you want Pastrnak with Krejci? The more lines you can send out there, the more you can wear a team down.
Because Toronto doesn't have a shutdown capability.
Bingo.
They don't.
I wonder if they're going to, like, you tell me, Ty, are they going to do this series to series? In other words, like, they look at it and say, well, Toronto can't handle them. Those guys ripped them apart last year. We'll do it again. And then in the second round, if we have to make a change and give Pastrnak to Krejci, we'll do that.
I think that's exactly what they're going to do. Because I looked at these last few games against Tampa Bay. They put Pastrnak with Krejci and DeBrusk for those games. And I read into that more than I read into anything else about Game 82, is they wanted to see how that line could handle Tampa. Because Tampa was playing quite a few regulars. McDonough was playing. I know Hedman wasn't playing. He's out hurt right now. He's going to be back tonight, I think. But so I looked at that and I said, they're going to do that. And they're going to put Heinen or whoever up with Bergeron and Marchand in round two. the balancing thing that you have to do was for Tampa. Last year, you were fine against Toronto with that Bergeron line together. It's round two that you have to balance it out. So I think they're going to do exactly that. If they can get by Toronto, I fully expect Pastrnak to drop down on that second line.
Ah, I'm learning something. I like this. Okay. Toronto D. Is it just too cliche to say that's the issue? But it still is the issue. And I'd forgotten this. Jake Gardner, right? He was on the ice. He was a minus five in game seven last year.
Minus five.
Minus five. Was he also the schmuckola that gave the last puck up to Bergeron in, you know, 2013? Or was that Riley? Was that Morgan Riley?
I want to say it was Gardner. I have to go back Gardner. And find it.
I think Gardner, I was going to actually use the S word. I was about to do it. I think Gardner crapped himself in 13. I think he crapped himself again last year. He's still out there in the rotation, right?
Yeah, he is. And do you remember when in game seven last year when the Brusk goal?
Was that Gardner?
Goal,
yeah.
He took the strangest route I've ever seen a defenseman take in my entire life. He basically turned his back and said, yeah, go in, get the inside positioning. That's fine. Like, he's just not a great shutdown defenseman. And the other thing is they get Jake Muzzin from LA, good player, strong player, but they have him on a second line with Nikita Zaitsev. That pairing is going to be slow. Like, that's a pairing you can take advantage of, in my opinion. And again, Babcock, reading him today, he was, what do you like about Zaitsev? He competes. You know what that means? He sucks. He's not good.
Well, when they got Muzzin, wasn't the idea to put him with Riley and it didn't take?
They didn't even try it.
Okay.
Babcock didn't want to do that because he's felt Riley, I mean, I'm sorry, not Riley. Muzzin has never played the right
knowledge
side.
Knowledge from Maz there. I'm sorry. Keep going.
I've done a little research here in the Leafs.
This is good puck talk.
And I'll tell you what, in the series last year, I was just looking up the numbers again. Do you remember how much they ripped them apart? Pastrnak had 13 points in the series.
As a line, they had what, 20-something?
Okay, yeah. Pastrnak had 13. Marchand had 9. That's 22. Bergeron had 8. 30 points.
30.
Seven games, 30 points, 10 goals, and the large majority of them were even strength. Pastrnak had 5 goals, all even strength. Marchand had 3 goals, 2 even strength. You know, Bergeron's goal was even strength. They killed them 5-on-5. Absolutely freaking vaporized them.
It's true, and you look at the Leafs, right? Even after they add Muzzin, they were still allowing almost 33.5 shots per game. Like, that hasn't really fixed their issues. They still can't play D. And so I think that's why this home ice advantage is so big for the Bruins, because they can control the matchup. Yep. They can absolutely control it. And that's something they have to do with Corrali being out for probably at least until game 4 or 5 of the series.
Okay. And speaking of that, how do you think they want to match up against those top two lines in Toronto? Okay. It's Tavares. I mean, there's those first two. You got Matthew, 1-2 at center, Tavares and Matthews. That's pretty good. How do you match up if you're the Bruins?
I think you put the Bergeron line and the Krug-Carlo pairing against Matthews. They did pretty well last year against that grouping. You know, you didn't get a Bergeron-Matthews lineup this year because both players were out during these head-to-heads, so I'm curious how that's going to look now. But that matchup was so kind to them last year, you have to go back to that. And then I think you rely on Chara and McAvoy against Tavares and Marner.
And no matter what the forward line is, you're not matching your forward line there.
No, I think they'll give Coyle that matchup personally, but we'll have to see how that all shakes out. I wonder about that line, like Johansson, Coyle, and Heinen, very limited playing time together. I think they only had one game as a line. Does that stick? Because if it were Chris Wagner to the right, let's just say, I would almost like that lineup more because I think they could rough him up a little bit. But now I wonder, you know, what they're looking at here with that line. I think Krejci, I mean, they've used him as a shutdown guy before too. They might try to do that, but I think Krejci's kind of your next wave, if you will. You were talking about putting waves on the Maple Leafs. I think that line should be, you know, that focus.
Krejci's huge. He's huge for them. He's huge.
Ty, who do you like to win the cup?
I like the Vegas Golden Knights to win the Stanley Cup this year. I think that team, you look at their holes last year, they got better. Like, they added Stastny, Pacioretty, Mark Stone. That is a good roster. And I think it's similar to the Atlantic. I think that whoever comes out of the Atlantic is going to the Stanley Cup. I view the Pacific Division the same way.
The Atlantic's us.
Yes.
Okay. Again, I forget the names.
Yes, I know. It's I used to think of the Atlantic as like the Rangers and the Islanders,
yeah, exactly.
The Flyers. No, but I look at that Pacific Division. You got Vegas, San Jose, Calgary, and Colorado. Colorado stinks. Don't include them in that grouping. But I think one of those three teams is going to Stanley Cup, and I think Vegas has probably the best odds right now.
Vegas, San Jose in the first round.
That's going to be a great matchup.
Again, that's that new format for you. All right, Ty, good spot here. Refresh me on the thing you said off the top. Rask has been one of the worst goalies in the league over the last month and a half.
Yeah, so since March 1st, he has an .881 save percentage.
Hold on, I'm going to write this stuff down. I'm going to need this
stuff.
Wow,
that blows.
Since March 1st, an .881 save percentage.
The only guy worse, Jonathan Quick has an 872.
Okay.
Talk about how that guy's fallen off the face of the earth. So just not impressive. Not impressed lately. And at the same time, Halak hasn't been that great either. Like, I thought Halak's game against Detroit was terrible. He was better in Minnesota, but so this is the thing I worry about with this team. You know, is their goaltending, you know, turning into a pumpkin overnight? That scares me.
And to back up what you were just talking about in regard to Rask, Ty, they just posted on ESPN.com on the paywall, the ESPN Plus site, the goalie heat index. They rank the 16 starting goalies. Rask is dead last.
No!
Wow.
Dead last, and they talk about that save percentage since March 1st.
Send that to DuPont.
I just sent it to you.
Send it to the hole. Yeah. What's the BBWA? I mean, I used to be a member of this, whatever this is, but what's the Hockey Writers Association?
PHWA.
PHWA. I used to be a member. I can't even remember what the hell it is. Send it to those folks. Send it to the local chapter of the PHWAA.
Care of dupes.
You know, the chapter chair is Haggerty. He's the chapter chair. Lips. He can't wait. Yeah, wow. He can't wait for game one.
Those must be productive meetings.
Oh, my God. Well, no, I'm sure you eat well, though, for those.
Oh, yeah.
Things.
Yeah. Let me guess. Is scotch for everybody at the table?
Ty, thanks for coming in.
Anytime.
Okay. Read Ty's stuff on 98.5thesportshub.com. You want more of this? You want more? Boy, talk about pucks in your pants after that spot. We'll do more of it in the off-air show. Ty's going to join me off-air show 6 o'clock on Facebook Live. Me and Ty on the off-air show. But that's at 6 o'clock. Here's an update. Breaking news in Foxborough today. A lot of activity. Murray, get you an update. We come back and talk about everything, including your Bruins calls.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
I just don't know what to say anymore.
Wrong. Sorry. Wrong. Sorry.
It's Felger and Maz.
They could use a good ass kicking.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
Well, let me wipe through these calls. We are going to get to the Magic Johnson Lakers story and the activity down in Foxborough today, of which there was quite a bit. But first, to you, Patrick and Needham, what do you got on the Bruins?
Hey, Felger, I think the major issue we're having here is we talk about Tuukka, how bad Tuukka's been, but can we look at Frederik Andersen, too? Over his last 10 games, .881 save percentage. He's just as bad as Tuukka, if not worse. And, you know, Ty talked about it, how bad the Leafs' defense is. Every guy they're going to put out on the right side of on their defense can't defend his own zone. Haynes is ancient. Zaitsev is just terrible. And Dermott is like Krug, but even worse in his own zone. Two of those three guys on the offside, you know, Zaitsev, the one right shot defenseman, and he sucks. I think we just got to realize how bad the Leafs' defense and goalie situation is.
Oh, I do. And you should, on paper, have a massive... The defensive advantage is real. Like, you have it on paper, and when I've seen you play Toronto, that shows itself on the ice. Here's a problem with the goaltending thing, and that is your advantage in net, which you also have. I think Tuukka Rask is a better goalie than Frederik Andersen. He is today. He was yesterday. He's been his whole career. He just is. That doesn't show itself on the ice. I don't see it on the ice. In fact, the last two times I've seen the Bruins play the Leafs have had horrible goaltending, whether it's Frederik Andersen or who'd you lose your mind over, Murray? Bernier? No, what's his name?
Reimer, you bum.
Reimer, not Bernier. Reimer. Reimer sucked too. The goaltending was a wash in both of those series because Rask did not play well. So that's the problem. Again, Murray forwarded this over. ESPN Advanced Analytics or whatever, their ESPN Plus site, ranked the heat index, the goaltending heat index going into the postseason, ranking the goalies going into the playoffs 1 to 16. Like, for example, number one is Ben Bishop in Dallas. Since March 1st, he has a .972 save percentage.
Holy mackerel, that's ridiculous.
Has a career playoff save percentage of .927. So they sort of put those two things together, your career track record and what you've done in the last month plus. And so Ben Bishop's number one. Grubauer, interestingly, we talked about him yesterday, is in Colorado now. He's number two. Marc-Andre Fleury is three. Mazurek in Carolina is four. Bobrovsky's 5. Matt Murray in Pittsburgh is 6. Pekka Rene's 7. Stop me when I get to Rask, okay? Number 8 is Robin Lehner with the Islanders. Number 9 is Braden Holtby with the Capitals. Number 10 is Connor Hellebuck. Have I gotten to Rask yet?
Nope.
Number 11 is Jordan Bennington with the St. Louis Blues. Number 12 is Vasilevsky, which I think that guy's nasty good. But he didn't have a very strong finish, apparently. Since March 1st, his save percentage is just .911. Vasilevsky, I think, is an elite goalie. Anyway, he's 12. Number 13, there's two guys in Calgary. David Rittich, I'm probably mispronouncing that, and Mike Smith. Have I gotten to Rask yet?
Nope.
Number 14, Frederick Anderson. They write about Frederick Anderson at number 14. His save percentage since March 1st is .898. Career playoff save percentage, .912. Both those numbers are bad. They write that Anderson has been remarkably consistent throughout his career. In his final season in Anaheim, he finished with a .919 save percentage, and in 3 years with the Leafs, Anderson has posted marks of .918, .918, .917. This is what he is. But he has finished poorly, and in the playoffs last year, he did not rise to the challenge, giving up a .376 goals against the Bruins. So he ranks 14th, which is still two places higher than the dead last, 16 out of 16. Neutral observers, not some agenda from Felger or haters or contrarians or the pro hockey writer. No, no, these are just neutral folks at ESPN Plus. 16 out of 16, Tuukka Rask.
Who's 15th?
Martin Jones.
Just real quick, before you read the little...
Oh, I like to.
Before you read the synopsis, the best part about this Matthew Coller who wrote this, he's the one guy who actually has the Bruins winning the Stanley Cup. They put out all their predictions today. He's the one guy that has the Bruins winning the Cup.
Wow, but he's got Rask. That seems a little counterintuitive, but anyway, he's got Rask dead last.
So two of the three coldest goalies in the league are going to be in the series?
That's correct. Should be entertaining.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
We've got John in New Hampshire on the Red Sox. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, I think the Red Sox made a big mistake when they let Sandy Leon go. He calls a much better game than Vasquez, and he wouldn't allow two pass balls and a steal at home yesterday. And he keeps Sale and Porcello particularly in the game and involved. And I think...
Well, let me stop you there. Another catcher call, Maz. You want to react to that?
Okay, so I was just going to say, how does the catcher get held accountable for the steal at home?
Yeah, right. What does he do?
I mean, on that play in particular, like, he can yell, I guess. So can everybody. But, like, I don't look at that one and say, you want to tell me you steal a second bad throw? Fine. Steal of home? How do you put that one on the catcher? So look, I'm not telling you Vasquez caught a good game yesterday, and I like Leon back there, too. It's not the catcher. It's the pitchers. In fact, I would say it's the overall malaise that has infected this team since they won. That they won, and then all of a sudden they thought, that's it, we don't have anything left to prove. And they've acted like it. Like, I don't know what else you can, how you could possibly defend them. There is no excuse for what is going on with them right now. There isn't one.
Coming up next, we give you a Celtics Minute centered around what's going on in Los Angeles and how that affects you. That's up next. We'll get to the Patriots and their activity coming up as well in our long commercial-free segment right after these words, and we'll take your calls on everything.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
I hate jokes. We're not taking jokes.
That joke blew.
It's Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Thinking about the great meetings I had with Jeannie the last couple of days. And, you know, I love her as a sister. And so today, I'm going to step down as a president. She doesn't know I'm standing here because I know I would be crying like a baby in front of her, even though I'm about to cry now. I know she's going to be sick, but I know I couldn't face her face to face and tell her.
You probably know this story by now, but last night, Magic Johnson stepped down as president of basketball operations for the LA Lakers out of nowhere. It was allegedly going to be Luke Walton's final game. But instead of them firing Luke Walton, Magic Johnson, without telling the owner, stood up in front of the cameras in front of the locker room to the point where the players and the coaches were having a hard time getting out of the locker room and held a 45-minute press conference rambling, nonsensical 45-minute press conference. You thought Belichick was bad, resigning from the Jets. See, this thing, resigning his job with the Lakers. Your thoughts?
I mean, this is one of those all-timers. It's one that we'll never, ever forget. That's what this is. This guy, holy mackerel, what a mess he is, what a mess the Lakers are. Like, the whole thing just prompts this litany of questions now, from LeBron James to the inner turmoil of the Lakers, or all of it.
So what's the biggest for you? Like, what's the biggest question or...
So to me is, like, is LeBron looking at this whole thing going, boy.
So the biggest one is this, I'm sorry to jump in. It's that. It's... What does it mean for LeBron? Does this mean they're clearing the decks because LeBron wants to bring someone in and build it without Magic Johnson? Or does it mean that Magic Johnson sees that no one's going to join LeBron, and so he's getting the hell out of there because they're not going to be able to turn it around, and so he's getting out while the getting's good? Does it mean that they're clearing the decks to trade LeBron? Like, so that it's
LeBron related. Yeah,
it's absolutely
totally LeBron. Because I look at it now and say, well, now what? Like, does LeBron effectively become the GM and run the thing? How much of LeBron being in LA was related to Magic? And I'm not sure there's a huge connection there, because my guess is LeBron wanted LA because it's LA. But even so, like, the whole thing and being able to draw talent, all of it. I'm wondering if LeBron's looking at it going now, oh no, man, I never should have come here.
So that's it. Did LeBron know it? And was LeBron even behind it? And it's part of LeBron's plan? Or was, you know, and the report is today that LeBron was floored like everybody else. Who knows?
I mean, allegedly, he and Rich Paul met with Magic over the weekend.
Had dinner on Saturday night, apparently. What I love, my favorite thing, and my favorite takeaway is listening to you green teamers over the last 24 hours, pleasure yourself over how stupid and dysfunctional and pathetic the Lakers are. And I'm not telling you you're wrong, but how you're reveling in it and how it's going to make that even more painful when they get another good player and win a championship before you do. Because they still will. They still will. They're still going to get the stars there. They've already gotten the biggest. And it's just a matter of time before one or two more join them, no matter who the freaking president of basketball operations is or the owner is. Or the coaches. It's just a matter of time before they get these players and win another championship and do it before you. And that's what's going to be the most painful thing. Because, you're not wrong to laugh at him. I mean, it's a dumpster fire. It's a joke. It's a joke. How you've done everything right, you know. And when I say that, you know, that's from 10,000 feet. You've made small mistakes along the way. But, you know, for the most part, solid organization, smart leaders, steady plan, smart, slow build. You've done everything right. And the Lakers are a freaking burnt out building, crack house, disaster area.
We got blew out.
And they're going to get the guys before you and win a championship before you. That's sort of my takeaway. Want to hear more Magic?
Oh, absolutely.
Just roll them in.
What I didn't like is the backstabbing and the whispering. I don't like that. You know, I don't like a lot of things that went on that didn't have to go on. I want to go back having fun. I want to go back being who I was before taking on this job. I had more fun on the other side than on this side, because now, tomorrow, I would have to affect somebody's livelihood in their life. And I thought about that. I said, that's not fun for me. That's not who I am.
He didn't want to fire him.
Oh, that's exactly what that is.
Oh, yeah. No, he didn't. He didn't want to fire someone. Yeah. Look, part of me, like, I was a little conflicted in this thing. A little. Because part of me listens to it and says, Magic didn't want to do this job from the beginning. He didn't.
He's not cut out for
it. No, he's not. I mean, again, think of it. For the first time in his life, he's actually had to work.
I think he liked having that kind of status with the team, and I think he liked all the stuff that came with it, and shaking hands and kissing babies and being the president of basketball ops in title. It's the work he hated.
Exactly.
Well, and getting your elbows dirty. Yeah.
That's right.
Which is, you know, lying, probably, and conniving, and
screw people over.
Doing deals and screwing people over and taking no prisoners and all that stuff. It's not in his nature.
We had to make this deal.
this guy's whole life, right? He was obviously enormously talented. He's one of the handful of great players of all time. And a unique player on top of that. He's been loved and revered everywhere he's gone. He walks into a room, everybody wants to talk to Magic. Now all of a sudden people are saying, you can't make a trade, you suck. People are talking behind your back. And he's like, I can't handle this. I'm out.
And he's also, you know, he doesn't get tampering. How many times was he?
At least twice.
He was fined for tampering a couple times, and, you know, brought before the league another couple. I thought, like, he still doesn't get the thing, and this is like a big part of it for him. Like, he Like, listen, he's all confused about it.
The fines and the tampering and this and that. I can't help young men who want me to help them. Or I can't tweet out, like Russell Westbrook, that was a great feat the other day. And I couldn't even tweet it out to say, hey, congratulations, man. And if I had did that, everybody would, oh, he's tampering. You know, I don't like that. I like to be free. And then I got a great life. I was like, damn, I got a great life outside of this. What am I doing? You know, I got a beautiful life. So I'm going to go back to that beautiful life.
So he can't tweet guys congratulations. Like, wow, what a killer.
Because he can't use Twitter.
You child. You got to be kidding me. But who is the Celtic that wanted to work with him? Wasn't there a story about that if someone wanted to work with him, he would have to go to the league and say, okay, I'll work
Ben
with you?
Simmons.
Or maybe it was that.
Oh, it was Ben Simmons.
It was Ben Simmons.
Yeah,
right.
It was Ben Simmons.
Right.
Absolutely. They wanted Magic to work with Ben Simmons because there's, you know, a little bit of similarity there, right?
Yeah.
Oversized point guard, ball handler, great passer, need to learn how to
and
shoot.
And he had to worry about the tampering thing because that's the way it works, Magic. You're not allowed to... That's just not allowed. Belichick is not allowed to go on the football field and coach Derek Carr, you know, for the upcoming season. That's just not the way it works. You can't do that.
I mean, think about how delusional he was when he took this job. Oh, you mean I can only
talk about my guys?
I can only talk to the Lakers? I don't get to be Magic? Because that's what the whole thing is, right?
He's right. He wants to be Magic.
Hey, I got
to
be Magic. I got to be me.
So LeBron James knows that I can always get myself involved in the game. I'm going to try to help Dwayne Wade get off early.
he wants to be. He can't be Magic.
You got to understand. You got to get to every loose ball.
This guy
knows more important to him to be Magic than it was to be the president of basketball operations for the Lakers.
I had more fun when I was able to be the big brother and ambassador to everybody. You know, I thought about Dwayne Wade retiring tomorrow, and I can't even tweet it out or can't be there.
Again with the Twitter.
Serena Williams called me a week ago and said, will you mentor me and be on my advisory board? And I said, yeah, I'm going to do that.
Sure.
You know, and so when Ben Simmons called, and we went through the proper channels, and they made me look like the bad guy out of that situation, but I didn't do anything wrong, but do everything right. I was thinking about all those times, all guys who want me to mentor them or be a part of their lives, and I can't even do that.
So let me tell you, like, the first instinct is to say there's something behind it. LeBron wants him out. LeBron wants him in. It's because this guy's coming, that guy's go. Maybe it's just on the face of it because he's so, I mean, he sounds so genuine about this nonsense. And I think it's pure nonsense. I mean, my God, how fun would it be to run a basketball team? There's only 12 players. It's not like you're preparing for a 3,000-player draft like these poor football schmucks. Like, running an NBA team
is really interesting.
Thank you, Irvin. It'd be kind of funny. It'd be kind of fun, I think. It's pretty simple.
Michael, no question about
it. Thank you, Irvin. Yes. But he just wants to be Magic.
Yeah, no, I want to be Magic. I mean, that's who I am. I want to be. Is Serena called? Oh, yeah, Patrick. What? I can't talk to her? Oh, man, this job sucks.
He went from zone back to...
The job got in the way of him being Magic. It got in the way. Like, I just find the whole thing's comical. Like, man, this job's really cramping my style. You mean I got to run the Lakers?
So, like, you know...
He went from zone back to man-to-man. Zone back to man-to-man.
Thank you, Irvin. So I want to spin all these conspiracy theories. Like, one that I like, I heard the Midday Show mention it, too. It's like... The timing, if it were anyone else, I'd put this timing together. So yesterday or the day before, it's reported that Kyrie Irving is willing to go take a meeting with the Lakers. And he's going to meet with the Lakers. And 48 hours later, the president quits. I'm like, any other player and any other free agent, I'm like, oh, there's something up here. But I don't know with Magic. Maybe it's just as simple as he wanted to be Magic.
Oh, I think it is. In a lot of ways, it is that simple. And look, there were clearly problems with the GM. Right,
Pelinka? Right, he didn't like the gym.
So, and that guy has the reputation of being a complete weasel. I mean, he like screwed over the Cavaliers 10 years ago in what was allegedly a handshake deal with Carlos Boozer. And then, you know, they soiled his reputation forever. And so, like, you know, I don't doubt that there was crap going on inside. LeBron's there. And there has to be crap going on inside. Because LeBron's the biggest weasel of all, for crying out loud. But, like, this whole thing... Oh, you mean I got to deal with these people?
Man, LeBron is just special.
No, my Magic's got stuff to do. I can't be with these people.
And he said it was on him. He looked himself in the mirror. He took self-evaluation of himself, self-inventory.
I think he's been living in a fantasy world for 40 years, and he doesn't know how to be disliked. I really think that bothers him.
He's got Serena on line one, Russell Westbrook on line two.
Simmons on three.
Yeah, Simmons said, D-Wade texted him. Like, he's got, hey, man, people are coming after me. I can't be doing this job.
LeBron James was so dominant throughout the whole playoff.
He's living the life of Riley. What is he, run the Lakers? I don't have time for that.
It's not about being meaner. It's about being mentally tougher.
This guy, it's fun to laugh at. The laughing stops when the Lakers get the next two superstars and win a championship before you. That's when the laughter ends.
Anthony Davis is still going.
But enjoy it while you can, because AD's going there and these other guys are going to go there, I think.
Byron Scott used to struggle against the Celtics. So I made sure I got Byron off.
Thank you, Irvin, again with that. Here's the update with Murray. 90 seconds, no commercials. We're back with your thoughts.
Or just went absolutely crazy. Adrian Gonzalez, we were praying and had our fingers crossed.
Shake it up. Try
to understand. You got to understand.
He's a magic man.
So we were like, is he going to pass through waivers? We're in a dogfight right now for our division. We had to make this deal.
You got to be special. Bam.
Let's just go to the Magic 8 Ball and see what the Magic 8 Ball says.
Shake it up. He's a magic man.
Adrian Gonzalez, you got Josh Beckett. Carl Crawford was the most sought-after free agent on the market. So we had to make this deal.
Bam.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.